The views expressed on this program are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of WVUD or the University of Delaware. Welcome to WVUD's Campus Voices, weekly conversations with interesting members of the university community, visitors to campus, and others engaged in thought-provoking research and community service. Stay tuned for Campus Voices on WVUD.
This morning on Campus Voices, we have Adam Foley, the program coordinator in the Office of Equity and Inclusion, and you've been working on a project that's been seen all around campus on posters.
Indeed. So the No More campaign, which folks have probably seen in the form of posters, was launched in October and is currently in full swing.
Is this going to be an ongoing program?
It is going to be an ongoing program. We're launching it this year, and we envision it being a sustainable product and campaign for upcoming years as well.
I think that's been one of the problems that some of the students have objected to, is the university comes up with these campaigns, but they're short-term. They don't lead to an ongoing discussion. But the object with No More is to have an ongoing discussion about the issues pertaining to Title IX, sexual harassment, and that kind of thing.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that that's the struggle with a lot of programs that get launched on universities. And I think institutional memory sometimes can be a little short. And so programs and campaigns will get debuted 1 year, but somebody new will take over in subsequent years. And so they will want to do something different. And our hope with this campaign really is that it becomes an ongoing effort and an ongoing conversation, so that it's something that students, faculty, and staff will see year after year, and it will become a part of kind of the campus environment and the campus community.
When you have to tell someone during the course of an elevator ride, what would you say is the whole idea of the No More campaign?
I'd say that the No More campaign is really an umbrella that encompasses all of our efforts on campus to raise awareness and provide education and outreach and really be proactive in our efforts, not only to provide information about sexual misconduct and the sexual misconduct campaign, but to allow people to begin thinking about it and bringing together all of the efforts that are going on campus. I think the reality was that there were a lot of efforts already taking place on campus, but they weren't unified, and so they were happening in different offices and different departments, and there were smaller conversations taking place. And so our effort with the No More campaign is to bring all of those conversations and all of those efforts together and be able to leverage the good work that's already happening on campus.
I think just about everybody on campus knows the obvious kinds of things, but, you know, for example, at your website, you know, you've got that statement about what harassment is, and I think that's something that you're trying to build out.
Absolutely, and I think the first phase in the campaign really is about kind of that baseline understanding of what it is that we're talking about when we talk about sexual misconduct. And one of the things that we found with the campus survey that we conducted in 2015 is that for a lot of students and a lot of other community members at UD, there wasn't necessarily an understanding of what sexual misconduct was. There wasn't an understanding of what harassment was, of what consent was. And as with a lot of other efforts, you can't begin to educate folks about how to react if they don't have a baseline understanding of what it is that we're talking about. And so this first stage in our effort is really an attempt to develop and establish a common language so that we all have a connected understanding of what we're talking about when we talk about sexual misconduct.
When we're talking about sexual misconduct or sexual harassment, we're not just talking about physical acts.
No, not in the least bit. And I think that's probably one of the largest misconceptions. And there's a lot of good work that's happening on college campuses around the country that are targeting issues of sexual assault and sexual violence and things of that nature. And that's certainly one part of the No More campaign. But beyond that, we are talking about aspects of harassment that take place in the workplace, harassment that takes place in the classroom. We're talking about inappropriate gestures and inappropriate comments and ultimately situations that are created that make individuals within our community feel uncomfortable. And we are in a position to be able to provide resources and provide education to help expand that understanding. And that comes in line very well with the new sexual misconduct policy that was rolled out last year.
One of the things I think is interesting about the No More campaign here at the University of Delaware campus is it's not just something that's being run by your office, the Office of Equity and Inclusion. It really is something where you're trying to get buy-in from staff, from students, from faculty members.
Absolutely. And it's something that we made sure that when we were developing this campaign, that there was buy-in from the beginning. And so much of the development leading up to the launch of the campaign involved various constituencies on campus. And so we garnered a lot of feedback from students, a lot of feedback from other offices, other colleges, other representatives in all areas of the UD community, because the hope really was that it would be something that everyone would be able to buy into and participate in. And we want to create efforts and create opportunities for everyone on campus to be able to be a part of that program.
The No More campaign is based around a pun.
It is. It is. No more in the sense that it's K-N-O-W, as in you really need to know more, but also in the sense that our goal is for there to be no more, N-O, sexual misconduct and other forms of sexual harassment on campus.
What all has been happening on campus besides putting up posters and sending out emails?
So beyond that, one of the largest efforts in conjunction with the campaign is the encouragement for individuals on campus to sign the pledge. And the pledge, which is located on the No More website, is an effort by the campaign for individuals to demonstrate their commitment to doing their part to end sexual misconduct and sexual violence on campus. And beyond that, we are continually looking for programming opportunities and opportunities to partner with other organizations, whether they be registered student organizations or other offices on campus that are bringing speakers to campus, that are providing educational programming. We're also in the works to create and offer a much more vibrant active bystander training program on campus. And so ultimately, our hope is that we're bringing together a lot of the efforts that are already taking place and a lot of the great work that a lot of the students on campus are already doing, and we can be in a position to help promote their programs and promote their efforts as well.
One of the things I think is very important is this active bystander training, because, I mean, too often I remember what it was like being, you know, at the age of Julia, our intern. You know, it's like you see something happen, it's not mine, and you just walk away.
Absolutely. And I think in some ways the active bystander movement is a means of encouraging people to stand up, to say something when they see those small acts of misconduct that take place. Because it's easy to say, I would be able to swoop in and be the superhero if I see something violent, something very egregious taking place. But it's often the passive comments, it's the inappropriate jokes, it's the small inappropriate touches that take place that make people feel uncomfortable, make people feel as though they're not quite sure if they should step in and say something. And we want to be able to provide folks with the tools and the information and really the courage to be able to step in and say something about that conduct and let people know that they are not okay with it, even though it wasn't something that was directed at them. And I think in doing that, we are stopping a lot of the behavior at its core before it rises to the level of some of the more blatantly inappropriate activities. Because we as a society are not in a position where it is the norm to speak up to say something when you feel as though something is inappropriate. And that could be with regard to sexual misconduct, that could be with regard to sexuality in general, that could be with regard to race or class or any other forms of oppression. And I think if we can, as a community, come together and recognize that that is the norm and we want to establish that as the norm, then it's going to empower more people to feel comfortable coming forward, and it's going to lead to a safer, more productive, and more positive community as a whole.
I think that the current student generation is more accepting of alternative gender identification than students were back in the dark ages of the 1970s when I was in college.
Absolutely, and I think it's in part an increased level of awareness, an increased level of education, but also an increased level of acceptance. And I think that comes with students that are now growing up where that diversity really is more of the norm, and it's something that is more widely talked about. And I think we can attribute that to the infusion of more diverse media sources and more diverse forms of communication. So that the information and the means of educating ourselves is much wider. And so the opportunities are there to gain that information to make it feel more comfortable.
Julia Giambastiani would like to join us and ask you a question.
How do you feel the current political climate and the upcoming changes is going to impact the No More campaign?
I think more than anything, the current political trends only reiterate the fact that this campaign is important. I think the realities were there long before the election happened, and in some ways it may cause us to double down on our efforts, but the reality is our work isn't changing because we know the work is important, and we've received the feedback from the community, and so they know that the work is important. And so my hope is that, if anything, it will encourage more people to get involved and more people to participate.
Now, a lot of what you've been doing has grown out of Title IX. Tell us a little bit about Title IX, because people of my age think of Title IX as the program that was used to close men's non-revenue sports to balance the number of slots for female athletes and male athletes, but it's much more than that.
Absolutely, and I think that's that thought process and that thinking around athletics is kind of where Title IX really made its name. And certainly it did a lot to provide more equity with regard to access to sports, both at the high school and at the college level. But on a broader level, Title IX is really about providing educational equity for any program that provides any sort of educational component within a unit or an organization that's receiving funding from the government. And so the broader implications for Title IX really involve increases in outreach, increases in resources, so that everyone on campus, for example, at the University of Delaware, has the opportunity to access the educational opportunities that they're looking for.
That implies to me that since it's tied with federal funding, that there's a great hope that at the University of Delaware and other college campuses that receive federal money, that this kind of effort, like our No More campaign, will continue.
I think it is, and I think you're seeing more of that effort taking place. And I think the current presidential administration has definitely done a lot to more proactively and outwardly encourage universities to take a more active stance in efforts to end sexual violence and sexual misconduct, and certainly a lot of the efforts coming out of Vice President Biden's office with the It's On Us campaign and other efforts of that nature have really raised some eyebrows and caused some efforts on the part of universities across the country.
There are two specific kinds of problems that happen on college campuses, and one is the date rape, the no means no kinds of things. And
sure,
my hypothesis is that one of the reasons that's become such a big problem today is the prevalence of online porn, which encourages people who have enough trouble understanding relationships to sort of get their thoughts even more messed up.
I mean, I think on a broader level, I mean, what you're talking about is a lack of understanding of consent,
right,
and what it means to be in a healthy sexual relationship. And it's interesting to think about the porn industry and the impact that they've had, because I think the research is definitely not conclusive one way or the other in terms of the overall impact that porn has on an individual's sexuality and their sex life and their notions of their relationships. But I think the overarching agreement is that, yes, there's something to that, and yes, there is an impact in some way, but I think even on a broader level, I mean, part of what we're talking about is the result of a lack of conversations in sex education courses around what it means to be in a healthy relationship and thinking about what healthy sexuality and what pleasurable sex should look like and sound like and feel like and how it should be expressed. And I think it's unfortunate that we've been, over the course of the last 20 or 30 years, been pouring massive amounts of money into supporting abstinence-only education, despite the fact that we know it isn't effective. And any researcher is going to tell you that, and there really is no evidence. And but part of what's lacking and been lacking in those educational components is that that aspect of healthy, positive sexuality.
I think that presents a problem for a university once we have these 18-year-old young men and women coming to campus that have not had education about proper relationships. They still haven't learned about healthy relationships yet.
Or even learned how to access information right. about healthy relationships. And I think that's why the proactive piece of the No More campaign especially really encompasses some of that understanding, because the reality is that if we can provide more of an educational component around issues of a healthy relationship, then we're going to prevent sexual misconduct before it even starts. And so a lot of the work that the campaign is doing to partner with student wellness and health promotion really looks at how we can connect those pieces.
That actually raises a very good point, Adam, because I noticed that the No More website, www.udall.edu/nomore, KNOWMORE, has a long list of agencies and offices on campus with whom you've partnered, and sort of like a list of places that students and other employees can go to get assistance and learn more.
Absolutely, and I think that goes back to the fact that even before the campaign, there were a lot of folks on campus doing a lot of good work around this issue. And so part of our focus really is to raise awareness and help connect students especially with those resources and help them know that those resources exist and that we can put a face and a name to those kind of nebulous offices that folks maybe don't have a case to go to unless something does happen. And we'd like for there to be more outreach so that you're stopping by to see us ahead of time and just to say hi and to so we can let you know that we are in fact there to provide those resources.
What are some examples of the different offices that you refer people to from the No More website?
By and large, we tend to break down some of the resources into entities that are fully confidential and those entities that are private. And when we think about that, we're talking about confidential resources such as SOS and the Student Counseling Center, particularly because they serve as a confidential resource that students especially can go to receive services, to ask questions, to report incidents, and those offices will keep that individual's identity confidential as long as they wish it to be confidential, and will receive notification that something has been reported, but not who it was reported by. And then with private resources such as ourselves, such as the Dean of Students Office, those are resources that that students can come to, and certainly we encourage students to come to not only file reports, but to ask questions and to get more information. And we strive to keep that information private so that we're only informing individuals on campus that need to know and able in order to be able to provide assistance.
So when you say private, you mean it's private advice, whereas confidential, then you're getting into the legal area of this is a confidential health record or educational record.
Correct, yes. So with private information, we're not going to share that information with anybody that doesn't need to know in order to get you the help that you need.
Okay. One of the other things I think happens in all workplaces, but it certainly happens at universities, is because of the power imbalance between faculty and graduate students or between higher level people and lower level employees. There's a fair amount of sexual harassment going on that is very hard to combat because one member in the pair has got a power relationship over the other member.
Absolutely, and that's one of the concerns that we're really attempting to combat with the No More campaign, and part of that happens by providing resources and communicating those resources so that employees or students or faculty members know that they can come to us to help deal with a situation that is taking place, because we have procedures and policies in place on campus to address those situations so that there isn't any retaliation and there isn't any blowback, because often that's the fear in a situation like that, that by reporting something, it is going to have a negative impact on your job or your promotion or your grade if you're in a class. And so we want to make sure that people know that that is a form of sexual misconduct that we don't tolerate, and it's something that we actively work to prevent and to make sure that if that is taking place or if there's a fear of that taking place, that we're gonna put the forces in place to address it.
One of the things that you say at the website is harassment is unwelcome verbal, nonverbal, or physical conduct of a sexual nature. And we talked earlier about how people pretty much understand no means no and, you know, physical conduct, but that verbal and nonverbal cues in the workplace in particular, I think that's a very difficult area to address.
It is, and it's something that we address on a case-by-case basis, because it ultimately comes down to how it is perceived by the individual, right? And so very often in those incidents, the person who is being accused of some form of harassment very, very honestly does not believe that they had any malintent in doing it. But if that behavior was perceived as such and perceived as inappropriate by the person that it was directed at, then we still run into a situation where we need to resolve that conflict that's taking place.
Well, I know that one of the things that when I was being taught how to teach back at the University of Missouri, and, you know, when I've been taught how to be a soccer coach or a Sunday school teacher, one of the things you talk about is trying to set a safe environment for both people.
Absolutely.
That is, you know, so Julia, the intern, and I don't meet in private places. You know, I mean, nothing's going to happen, but that protects both of us in that kind of situation.
Absolutely. And I think that's good advice no matter what the power dynamic is. And so it's making sure that as much as you can, you're mitigating the potential for those sorts of situations to take place. And so whether that's making sure that you're meeting in a public space, or that you're leaving the office door open, or you're limiting conversations to happening after class or in other areas, like there are a lot of ways that you can do that.
Right.
And ultimately it comes down to the comfort level of the two individuals that are engaging in whatever type of conversation or meeting that's taking place.
Julia had a question she wanted to ask you.
I think something that accompanies the prevalence of sexual misconduct on campus is the prevalence of alcohol use and alcohol abuse on campus. So how do you communicate to students? We talked a lot about a basic understanding of consent and things like that. How do you do that when the lines are blurred when it
Sure.
comes to alcohol consumption?
Absolutely, and I think that component of alcohol education certainly is linked in with the No More campaign and with kind of the overall educational approach. And yes, the reality is that when alcohol is involved, as it can be, then the lines get a little more ambiguous for some folks. But that's where this notion of yes meaning yes comes into play, in helping folks understand that if they are not in a position to be able to say yes, then there isn't an opportunity for consent. And that the hope really is that kind of understanding of being able to separate those two pieces to some degree is going to help with folks making decisions that are in their own best interest and in other people's best interests along the way.
One of the things I think is very important for listeners to understand is that Adam and the whole Office of Equity and Inclusion are not focused just on this, but on all sorts of different diversity issues, race, gender, religion. It's really important for a university to embrace the opportunity to get input from all these different kinds of people.
Absolutely, and that's ultimately what makes this university tick and what makes this university succeed. I think it's exciting that President Assanas has come in and very much kind of doubled down on his commitment to issues of diversity and inclusion and encouraged different departments and offices on campus to ramp up their efforts. And so that's led to increases in attendance at a lot of our programming and a lot of our efforts. And we do a lot of educational programming around all issues of diversity and inclusion. And I think you can't talk about one aspect of diversity without talking about all of them. And so that involves this notion of intersectionality, which is the reality that all of these different pieces of our identity are connected. And in order to understand a person as an individual, you need to understand all of those different aspects of who they are. And so just as none of us are defined by the fact that we are only a student or only a staff member or only a faculty member, or we are only male or only female, for example, there are a lot of ways to understand who we are and how we tick. And when we can begin to come together and understand each other in all of those multifaceted ways, then we're going to be able to work together more effectively and achieve a lot of our common goals more effectively.
The phrase he's used is piggybacked off a movement that's already out there, the Inclusive Excellence Movement. And I know it's just makes sense. People are from different backgrounds, different genders, different countries. You're going to bring different points of view, and maybe they'll have an answer that I, as an old white guy, won't have.
Absolutely. I mean, I think at the end of the day, like, the only way that we are going to grow, the only way that we are going to achieve new outcomes and find new successes as a university community and as individuals is by bringing in those diverse voices, because those new perspectives are how change happens, and it's how growth happens in any organization. And the university is certainly no example, but more than that, I think the university has a responsibility to be a leader in the community in terms of those efforts.
Adam Foley from the Office of Equity and Inclusion, thank you so much for coming down to Campus Voices.
You are very welcome, and thank you.
Thanks for listening to Campus Voices. The views expressed on this program are those of the individual participants and do not necessarily reflect the official views of WVUD or the University of Delaware. For more information about Campus Voices and to find archived episodes, visit our website, www.udel.edu/campusvoices. We invite you to tune in every Thursday morning at 8:30 for Campus Voices on 91.3 FM, WVUD, and WVUD HD1, Newark, or online at wvud.org.